Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, and welcome to a very special episode of Serious Issues, a sometimes-ly comic book podcast. My name is Levins.
My name is Siobhan.
And we are currently out the back of King's Comics in Sydney, 403 Pier George Street.
Nice.
Is where we live. And we have a special guest with us. You may have heard us talk about one of two collections that he has been the editor and publisher on in the previous couple of episodes we've done.
And also writer of some stories.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I wrote one of the stories in the first issue.
Yeah.
His name is Chris Neal, and he is the publisher and editor of Meet Me in the Pit, which is a biannual.
Yeah.
Is it going to be quarterly or halfly?
The rate at which I publish it is the rate at which I make my money back on it.
Yep.
So, yeah, at the moment, I've made two a year, hopefully, minimum.
With your support, dear listener, we could get one of these a day.
Yeah, totally.
Meet Me in the Pit is an anthology that comes out. We've got two issues of it so far, and it's all about people's experiences with music, which is a touchy subject, given that it is an intensely personal subject and something that I think can lead to some of the cringiest moments in art and pop culture.
Looking at you, Kieran Gillen.
and Joss Whedon. And who did Juno?
Diablo Cody.
I think that's the worst music reference in a movie or anything
with
ever.
With the Sonic Youth thing?
Juno and Jason Bateman they're discussing like the music that he used to love growing up. And
yeah, he's like, oh man, this Sonic Youth cover of the Carpenters, it's so good. You gotta get across it, man.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's just like, often it's a chance for writers to project their like interests on a character that isn't them and make them cool because of they're sharing the same interests as a writer. It can be very cringy. But as Meet Me in the Pit is mostly like diary kind of style comics, I think it escapes that. And there are a few moments of cringe within Meet Me in the Pit, and the ones that do exist are kind of purposeful and I think add to it overall. Meet Me in the Pit is all Sydney creators? Australian?
No.
Not even Australian?
All Australian. I'll try not to hit the table.
All Australian.
this issue, just by total accident, everyone in it is from Sydney. The only person who isn't in it is in Melbourne, and she was supposed to be in issue one, but she got super ill around the time we're working on issue one. And just fell back on her commission work and stuff. So I was like, just give it some time and I'll have you on for issue two.
So you've been a comic book reader and a comic book journalist for many years now.
Yeah.
You write about comics for various websites in Australia and the world.
Yes.
Where are you writing for at the moment?
Whoever will take me.
Heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. Like last year I did a stint working for doing some articles for Multiversity Comics.
Oh, cool.
And I did a really big stint, like 6 months at Comic Book Resources, just writing like a feature every week until it critically burnt me out, and then I just stopped submitting pitches.
Nice.
Yeah.
Doing comics related things weekly is very tough.
It is hard. I've heard that. What was the process of working with CBR like?
Fine. Their thing was that they wanted to have you try and pitch something weekly and trying to put something out weekly. And at the time, I was working a full-time job at a children's magazine as the writer there.
Oh, gosh.
So my Saturdays or my Sunday would be spent smashing out this article. And unfortunately, was not for a lot of pay, even with the kind of American exchange rate. And that kind of led to me kind of dropping off there as well. But yeah, it was cool. Like, most of it was, hey, I have an idea. I really, really want to write about this thing. And then I'll submit it to them. And they'll be like, yeah, that sounds fine. Like, I really like the arc in the Spider-Man Gauntlet series where it's the two Rhino issues.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to write a kind of retrospective about how much I like those comics. Pitch that and let me write it. And then stuff like I did an article about when Spider-Man Homecoming came out, being like, what villains might we see in Spider-Man Homecoming 2? Who's to say? But yeah, I know they've kind of moved to more list stuff now.
Yeah.
I never did any of those. And
they're fun.
That was your problem.
Yeah.
They are fun to do.
Yeah.
No more lists. Love a good list.
Mostly food-based lists. Which there's actually a big article going around at the moment that someone in the States wrote. He did like a Best Burgers in America, like kind of video series. And then 6 months after he announced this place in Portland as the best burger place, it shut down because they couldn't handle the pressures that being named Best Burger Place in America brought with it.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like this big, awesome, thoughtful piece about blaming. You know, is the writer to blame? Is the preparation needs to be, you know, put into a big decision like that? But I don't think any comic book creator would ever complain about too many people buying their comics. So
yeah.
I don't think that exists in the comic world.
So how'd you go about finding people for Meet Me in the Pit? Because I was like, I'm amazed with each issue at like the amount of talent that you've managed to find, especially considering I know so few of these people. Not that I'm like some, you know, paragon of knowing the Sydney comics community, but I was like, whoa, I didn't know there were people like this.
Yeah, so for the first issue, pretty much I just wrote out a list of Australian cartoonists that I really like and who I follow, and like I bought their zines at, you know, Otherworld or the MCA zine fair previously, and was just like, it would be cool if I reach out to them. They say no, they say no. If they say yes, that's the best. Like, I have literally nothing to lose to reach out to these people. And so for the first issue, I reached out to about 7 people, and 2 of them said no because they were in the middle of doing their like university honors or masters.
Okay.
So they're like, I don't have time to do this comic book for what you're paying me. Sorry. But they later worked on issue 2, so it all worked out in the end.
Amazing.
But yeah, just kind of reached out to people and was like, do you want to do this? And was surprised that so many, like all of them said yes, except for, you know, those two. And then I did a post on Twitter just being like, I'm looking for cartoonist people. If anyone knows anyone, tell them to send me an email. And yeah, so half of issue 1 were people I went to, and the other half were people who came to me. Beck, who did the cover, I've been friends with her with a couple of years now. We did a comic together.
Give a full name.
Rebecca Lowry. We did a comic together. Early last year, the last at 2017 is last year, yes. 2017's Otherworld Zine Fair, we did a like little 8-page crime story where it's like a guy being followed home, thinks he's being followed, and he gets in, and the assassin's already at home waiting for him and shoots him. We did that and like reso printed it. And I think that is also why I printed Meet Me in the Pit the way I did, because we spent the entire day at like the reso graph place in Marrickville printing it out. Then we have to go home and like cut certain parts of it and fold it, and like just the effort put into putting it together was terrible, and I never want to do that again. It was also all purple ink, so it looked like I'd just been like smashing my hands in like blueberries all day, just
beating up Grimace.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, then issue 2, pretty much everyone on issue 2 is someone I reached out to. Everyone, like, that was me just being like, oh, cool, these people worked on issue 1. Maybe I can get these people to work on issue 2. And all of them said yes. So that was super great. And I had a couple of people also email me while I was working on issue 2 to be like, I want to work on this. So I've already got like half of issue 3 sorted out. I need to actually send them all follow-up emails. So
good reminder.
Half hand-wavy So maybe.
You mentioned something very, very important when you were describing your relationships with your artists, and that is that you pay them.
Yes.
And I feel like in the world of self-publishing comics in Australia, that is an extremely new and daring concept.
Very rare.
Yeah, I mean, all of the entire thing is paid for out of my pocket. So I pay for the printing, pay for all the artist fees, any other things on the side. Like, I had to go buy a bunch of bags and boards to like put stuff in when I send them overseas and stuff. Not overseas, when I post them out. But yeah, just thought it would be cool to pay them. Like,
I think that seems very fair, agree. Very reasonable.
I don't know how to phrase that. I'm just like, yeah, like, you know, I know how it is being a kind of writer in Australia and doing work for no pay for publications and even overseas publications, and that, you know, you get the exposure, but doesn't really having the, I guess, the money on the table kind of gives you a bit more of a motivation to do it. There was a place I was writing for that was not paying me, and just they would always be like, yeah, you guys should, we need more pitches, someone should pitch. And I'm just like, oh, I could pitch to them, but also I could pitch to someone who will give me like even a little bit of money to write the same thing. So
yeah,
at least value you in some way.
Yeah, totally.
You can't eat exposure,
pretty much,
unfortunately. So you mentioned the printing process for Meet Me in the Pit, and I think that's definitely one of the things that makes it stand out against a lot of local comics is how nice the print quality is. How did you do that? How is that possible?
There is a man who lives in West Pennant Hills and apparently has a grinding flat out at the back of his house with a printing press in it.
Oh, that's my dream.
And
that's actually,
that's like 10 minutes,
that's actually
my house.
The lovely
and
dream.
I just send him
a printing press. I just
send him my PDFs, and then he sends me the proofs, and then I send him the updated PDFs, and then he sends me the box of comics. He's a lovely man.
Wow.
The place is called Comic Books on Demand.
Wow, cool.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. Dude's name is Doug. If you want to print comics, go to him. When I was setting it up to get a quote, he has on the side the kind of like, this is my recommendation if you just want to do like a standard comic book print. And that's what I chose, to just print issue one. And I just haven't changed the specs since. Like, just him being like, you should make the cover this thick, you should make the cover internals this thick, make them gloss, make them look like this, whatever. And yeah, I got it and was just like, oh, wow, like, this looks so nice and professional looking.
It's so it's so good when you find someone like that, because the information that you need when you're doing something like this on your own is never like where you want it to be.
Yeah.
So when someone does show up with like all the answers and all you need to do is pay them,
they'll
get your money.
Totally. Yeah. And he's just a super nice dude. Like, when I sent off the quotes to print issue two, he sent me back an email being, whoa, issue two already, Chris? Issue one was great. I'm really glad to see that this is happening. I was just like, yeah, Doug.
What a legend.
He's so nice. Yeah, such a good dude.
So what's your editing process like? Do you just go like, yep, excellent, thank you, this one will go first, this one will go second, or is it more complicated?
I guess in terms of editing individual people, people send me their pages, and if they have like any errors or whatnot on it, I'll go back and be like, hey, you misspelt this. One of my friends worked on issue two, Scott, who did the Jeff Rosenstock comic. That's all like 3D art.
Oh, yeah.
So you're looking at.
That's really cool.
I've been friends with him for like, God, years. We became friends because of comics. And it's been years of us being like, we should do comics together. And then we never do because we have the ideas. And then when it comes to execution, we're just like, oh, I can't be fucked. he worked on that. And looking at his stuff, like, I added a bunch of his pages and stuff, being like, yeah, this is misspelled, like, there's a comma here, blah, blah, blah. Most of everyone else is, like, not bad in terms of spelling, but, yeah, there's a couple that I've sent back just being like, you this needs to be changed and all that. But, like, pretty lax in terms of editing stuff. Some people have sent me, like, scripts or just vague idea outlines of what they want to do. Thankfully, it being like short 3-page comics, no one really gets too far gone in terms of like concept and execution. It's pretty like 1-to-1, because you don't have that much space to work with. But just whatever, really. Like, there are pages, there are people where I'm just like, hey, just make a comic, submit it by this date. It needs to be themed around music. In like, the brief is always, it needs to be themed around music in any way. I don't particularly care how it's themed around music. You can do it as a review or like a diary comic, or just make something fun up. Do whatever you want to do, and then I won't get anything until the pages have just like come in. And it's, and like, in some way, it's very like, they could hand me a huge steaming pile of shit, and it's just kind of like, well, this is what I have to work with. I guess this is what I'll work with. But no one has done that so far, which is really, really not yet. So yeah, that's really, really nice and reassuring of just like, yeah, I bet on the right horses by getting these people on.
Now, since we have a lot of listeners outside of America, sorry, Australia, who have not been able to get their hands on a comic as easily as some of us here, do you want to describe a couple of your favorite strips from the two issues so far?
Totally. In terms of overseas stuff as well, I do have on the web store digital copies that you can get.
Oh, great.
Great.
So, Very clever.
You can get a, you know, nice fancy
PDF.
Yeah, and the PDF I use is the same as the print PDF, more or less. So it's all like nice and higher res and fancy and stuff. So
you can also purchase copies at kingscomics.com. That's true. We ship internationally.
That's true.
Lots of options.
Yeah. It's all here. Yeah. One of my favorite comics in issue two is Claudia's. It's the first comic in the book.
Full name again, please. You got to shout them out in a big way.
I don't know how to pronounce her surname because I'm one of those people of just like, oh, I don't know how to pronounce this name, so I will never say it out loud, and I never have to deal with that.
Yeah, let us just go for it.
Yeah, take a red hot go.
Claudia Accole, I believe it is. Sorry, Claudia, that's not how it's properly pronounced. Her comic is really cool in that it's her kind of using the idea of how certain songs are tied to certain memories. So she has this really nice sequence in the middle of it where it's a 9-panel grid, and it's just the exact same, her in the exact same pose, like on the bus holding the rails, in the shower, just kind of sitting at a cafe, and it's like the song playing through it, and it's just kind of, yeah, that idea of like, you know, memories and songs being tied together. That's really great. The way she did that comic as well is really cool, in that it was just, I think it's 3 layers of tracing paper.
Incredible.
That have just been put that have just been put on top of each other, and it gives us this nice faded look of the background stuff. But yeah, that's a fantastic comic.
That's one of my favorites. It's so gorgeous.
She's so good. We had the launch show last Wednesday. The night before, she messaged me and was like, oh, hey, I have the originals. Do you want to hang them up? Because they probably won't get seen any other time. So I, like, she lived like 15 minutes around the corner. So I, like, drove over, picked them up, and hung them up at the gallery. And,
oh, unreal.
And they're so good. My dad really likes that comic.
Ah, and I was like, nice.
He was like, yeah, it's such a good comic. I think that's my favorite. And I was like, oh, well, the artist for it is just over there. So he went over to her and was like, hi, I'm Chris's dad. Your comic is so good, and had like a nice spiel to her. And I was talking to her later, and I was like, did like a man come over to you and kind of like congratulate you on the comic? She was like, yeah. And I was like, that was my dad. And she's like, oh, what a lovely and sweet man. I was like, yes, yes, he is.
Dad approved.
Yeah. In issue 2 as well, there's another like short thing by Evie Hillier, who, if you're not following on Instagram, you are an idiot. She is like just one of the funniest cartoonists working
What's
in Australia.
What's her
Instagram? Siobhan just grabbed her phone.
Yeah, genuinely.
Her Instagram is Yves, Y-E-E-V-Z. I think there might be an underscore at the start or end.
Yeah, there we
I
go.
Don't know. She's
Very funny. Oh, I'm already following her. Nice. Yay. Good job, me.
She's got the like Instagram thing down, in that every panel, it'll be like 6 images, and every panel is just one image, so you swipe through it, and it's just these weird, like, bizarre comics. This isn't her Meet Me in the Pit comic, but there's one in there where it's like her comic avatar standing there, and there's like someone else there talking about like, oh, you like girls, it's just a phase, you'll grow out of it, and like, just, you know, this constant kind of like badgering of like gender identity. And I forget what the rest of the setup is, but the ending of it is 2 women on their backs and then hands come out of their vaginas and shake hands.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's the best punchline. Yeah. I don't even need to know the rest of the joke.
Because they're just, because they're not lovers, they're just friends, because, you know, 2 women can never be more than that. But yeah, just that punchline page is something that sticks in my mind.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's a good image.
But yeah, she's really, really funny. And she did 3 pages in number 2, where one of them was like the type of weirdos you meet in a mosh pit. One of them was this nice story about, like, I guess the camaraderie you get of being in a mosh pit. And then one was all short comics where someone is like, I listen to all types of music. And someone else is like, all types, huh? Siri, play Third Wave Ska. And it's like a dude clawing his eyes out while the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones playing in the background.
Yeah, right, I really enjoyed her her comics. They were like really like Sunday newspaper vibe, strip comics. It was a good vibe.
She's super funny. Another comic in issue two I really like is Anita Gallagher's, where she went to Japan at some point as like an exchange or something.
Is this the one where she's talking about like idols and stuff?
She talks about like the idol culture of Japan and like seeing like live J-pop bands and how every band, those big bands all there have like certain things of like... Mm. Maybe this band, you have to bring in a torch. Like, that's how you signal you like them, and, like, weird hand gestures and stuff. And it's just her, like, showing three experiences going all of them. And, like, yeah, just that was just a really, really fun comic. And just, I don't know, interesting in that of just how pop cult, like, pop stardom in Japan is so different to Australia. Because she has at the top, like, things there. It's like, I think it's like, oh, what is it? Not fanfare, but yeah, it has like whatever it is, where one of them is like some weird like torch with this like D20-esque design on the top that you line up, and there you to show that you like the band, you have to do this weird like you point just one hand up in the sky like heaps, which I'm doing right now, but this is an audio medium, so
imagine sorry. Do it yourself imagine. At home, everybody.
Yeah, just get your finger, put one point finger out, and just point really, really high in the sky and raise your arm and stuff.
And repeat.
Now you're doing it.
Now you're a fan of this band.
Yeah. Like, that was really cool. And, like, yeah, she has such a really nice, expressive cartooning style.
Cool page layouts as well. Yeah, I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah. In issue one, I think you know this guy, the writer called Christoph
Bojax.
Yeah.
Christoph is a lovely, lovely man.
Yeah. I've hung out with him a couple of times. Like, he's a really, really cool dude and, like, just wants to do comics so badly and, like... Yeah. So happy that we kind of have someone doing that. I've read a bunch of it. Like, I tabled with them at a, like...
Yeah, because he's published his own before as well.
Yeah, he has. He used Doug as well.
His own comics are great.
I was just about to say, I really like the way he's a printed too. So it's the same dude. There
you go. Same dude, yeah.
Shouts to Doug.
Yeah, big ups, Doug. Yeah, Christoph is great. And he did this amazing comic where it's based on King Gizzard's Nonagon Infinity album. Also, the artist for it is a dude called Josh Spencer. Based on King Gizzard's Nonagon Infinity album, which that album just is designed that you can play it on constant repeat, and it just cycles back into it. So the comic he made is this amazing, like, Jack Kirby-esque looking Conan the Barbarian story, peppered with King Gizzard lyrics. And the way that it ends is that it loops back into the very start of the comic.
Real good.
So good.
So good. Such a, like, smart concept. Especially for like, oh, you have three pages to tell a story, and he's just like, nah, I'm just going to use like an infinite pages to tell the same story forever and ever. Meg O'Shea did a comic in issue one. Meg O'Shea is the best indie cartoonist in Australia, which I know is sounds like a big call and big metric, but man, like, I genuinely cannot imagine going to a zine fair in Sydney and not buying one of her comics. One of her strips. Recently, she published it on The Nib over in, like, on the US.
Yeah,
and she was just,
she won an award,
she's been
didn't she?
Nominated for an Ignatz Award,
yeah,
which
huge.
That is so huge and so fantastic. But yeah, she's fantastic. And she's just kind of been in, the Aussie comic scene for a while. Like,
what's the name of her main comics that she puts out herself at Zine Fairs? Has she got?
They're all like short ones.
Okay,
like,
sure.
There's one called Lad Ghost, where it's just a ghost who's a lad.
Oh my god, that's so good.
And then she did another one called like The Wolves of King Street, where it's just these kind of like shitty Newtown types rolling through King Street, but they're wolves and stuff.
Great.
But yeah, she's just so good, and like the way she draws comics are fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, she did a comic in issue one that's all about her growing up with a really, really lame music taste. And not understanding
people
really in art
school. I really identified
with
that.
Yeah. People in art school having all these cool music tastes and just being like, how do you know?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
About like the Velvet Underground and yep. Sonic Youth and these cool bands. I grew up listening to WSFM. Like, I don't understand how. I also empathize with that as well, of just growing up in a household where just an uncool music taste, which led to me being like in high school and my favorite bands being Weird Al and Real Big Fish.
Yes, please. Yeah.
I'll fly the third wave ska flag forever.
Me too, but I think I was also cool.
All right. You do a comic podcast.
I'm not saying I am anymore.
Fair enough.
I have never been cool. I never will be cool. I'll die a nerd.
At no point, though, did I think liking Real Big Fish was lame. So I don't know how.
Was it cool when you were in high school and we're actually a bit younger than you? And it was no longer cool when we were in high school.
A cool band in 1998.
Yeah, but when we were in high school in the 2000s, it wasn't cool. Right, okay, sure. You're an old man.
I got into Real Big Fish because all my favorite Newgrounds animators would use Real Big Fish songs in their like funny video game parodies. And also, they did a lot of the soundtrack for the hit movie Basketball.
That's right.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so...
I went through a big rockabilly phase, which is probably more embarrassing.
I feel like that's worse.
Yeah, that's worse. It's worse, isn't it? It is worse. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said
double basses are pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh.
Chill out, The Living End.
I played a Living End song at a festival on Saturday.
How'd it go?
I was playing in a tent called Guilty Pleasures.
Lovely.
And I did like a late 90s, early 2000s like pop punk bit. And then I played Near Prisoner Society.
Yeah.
And it went off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
How come there's no comics about Living End so far? Is that
what you're
playing? I don't know. I'll write one.
What kind of Australian
issue
music anthology?
Issue 3, all Living End special.
Yeah. Well,
I bet you could probably get them
issue
to
Issue 7,
write one.
All Area 7 special.
I don't know what that is. What's
so,
that?
So uncool. Do any of you know?
No. I'm familiar with that.
Australia's premier third wave ska band.
Oh, were they?
Yeah. So whenever like Real Big Fish or whatever would tour, you'd either get the Porkers or Area 7 in support.
Were they on any of the Tony Hawk soundtracks?
No, Australia never made it that big.
And I don't give a shit. That's the ultimate metric of good ska. Did you ever listen to Flogging Molly? I know we're going away from the topic of comics,
but
did you ever listen to Flogging Molly?
Yes,
one of my friends in high school was like, they were his favorite band and he was obsessed with them. And then by osmosis, I got into them. And
My name is Siobhan. If there was anything like Irish themed, I was like, that's my new favorite thing for some reason. It went from The Cause to Flogging Molly. That's not true.
Yeah. And then I discovered the Pogues and I was like, oh, this is what like good sound like.
Yeah, I love their ska music.
Yeah. Irish ska.
So let's before we jump ship over to talking about general music and comics, where can we pick up Meet Me in the Pits 1 and 2?
Yeah, so Meet Me in the Pit 1 and 2, you can pick it up online at gumroad.com/blueprintcomics. You can also follow my Instagram, which is instagram.com/blueprint.comics. You can also buy it if you're in Sydney or overseas. You can buy it from King's Comics. You can also buy it up the road from King's Comics at Books Kinokuniya.
I'll allow it.
Yeah. Well, I worked there for like 3.5 years. So
yeah.
Colors run deep. And if you live in Brisbane, you can pick up copies at Junkie Comics.
I haven't been there yet, but it just looks like my dream comic
book store. Absolutely. Like, I really want to go there, but just... I have no
reason
to be.
I don't want to go to Brisbane.
Yeah, I have zero reason to be in Brisbane, so I don't think, like, I want to go to a comic book store is good enough for
you. You know who else who's from Brisbane? Area 7.
Are they?
I think so. I'm assuming.
I'm going to listen to Area 7 when I get out of here. I'm going to listen to them and be like, oh, yeah, horns.
you can hear the hats they're wearing.
Yeah. Oh, I can see. I just visualize the, like, checkered vans. Slip-on vans.
You better believe it.
Yeah. I'm gonna pick it up.
Do a Scar special. Meet me in the pit. Skank with me in the pit.
Skank with me in the pit.
I want to talk about quickly with you examples of music in comic books that we've all enjoyed in the past, and if there are things that we maybe not enjoyed, what's good, what isn't good. We mentioned I'm a big fan of the writer and cartoonist David Lapham, and he did a series for Vertigo in the mid-2000s called Young Liars, which is him at his, like, least sensical in terms of a cohesive narrative, but it's a very vivid, imaginative book about... Well, you said you read it too, yeah, Chris?
Like, yeah. It's... I don't know how to describe that book.
I started and I was like, oh God, I got to pass the mic.
Yeah. All right, so I think it's Danny is the main character. Is kind of a bit of a shitty bloke, and he's friends with this girl called Sadie who got shot in the head and survived because they only clipped part of her brain or whatever. But now she has no, like, inhibition control. So it starts with her in a mosh pit, like, punching some dude in the face. And it's like this big, burly, like, skinhead-looking punk dude. And then he takes her outside to, like, beat the shit out of her. And then they fight one another. And it's just Danny kind of, like, being all like, oh, I love her, but, like, she doesn't love me. And, yeah, and then they meet these other people. And you meet his friends, and you just realize that these people are all just, like, absolute garbage people. And they've just all combined together in this, like, really terrible friend group. And then Sadie is, like, the heiress to some, like, Walmart-esque global food chain. So her father has sent out these people to find her and bring her back. And they're just, like, really... they call the Pinkertons, but they're, like, really violent kind of, like, private eye types. And whenever they show up at stuff, it's always at gigs. And they always rock up wearing black T-shirts with, like, band logos on them. Like, I just remember, like, this one bit that they're just in there and they're all just standing, and one of them's just wearing, like, a plain black t-shirt with the word Weezer across it. It's just the most, like,
if the band's called the Pinkertons,
so. No, they're called, oh well, yeah, that's true, that's yeah, yeah. True. But Pinkerton's also, like, the 1930s detective agency.
Oh, okay, sure, so, thing. Yeah. Yeah,
and also the name of a Weezer album.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
That's a joke.
I'm going to have a nap now.
Yeah, there's no bits in the comic where one of the characters just, like, man, Japanese schoolgirls do it to me every time.
Half Japanese schoolgirls.
That's true. Man, let's talk about an album. We were talking about Skull already. Let's talk about an album that I listened to in high school and has, like, really not aged as an adult. Of just, like, oh, Rivers Kuma, you were really, like, sad and kind of horny dude.
Yeah.
I think that's why that makes them good.
Yeah, isn't that why nerds legacy identify with them forever?
Yeah, pretty much.
Sad, horny music.
Last time they toured Australia, there was a Big Kings team who all went together. It was very lame.
Because they played the Blue album in full,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, that was good fun.
I didn't go to it, and I regret not going to it.
I had a good time.
But yeah, I remember there's, like, an article I read where, because when Pinkerton came out, everyone panned it and were just like, what is this garbage? And now everyone loves it, like, retroactively.
Yep.
But I think maybe it was Chuck Klosterman, I don't know, wrote an article where he was like, Weezer are the way they are now because of that moment where Rivers Cuomo was the most literal and just open book of all time, where all of those songs in there, I absolutely believe those are him, like, one-to-one, and there's no, like, Rivers Cuomo character, and he puts it out in the world, and everyone's just like, no Rivers Cuomo, yeah, I hate this. So then he's like, fine, I'm going to sing songs about wanting to be in Beverly Hills and Islands in the Sun.
Yeah.
And that's why you kind of get, like, weird, goofy pop rock Weezer now, where it comes out and people are like, oh, every album is always like, oh yeah, you know, this is a real return to form. And then no one talks about that album a week after it comes out.
Mm.
Let's jump genre and talk about Ed Piskor's Hip Hop Family Tree, which I wish I was a bigger fan of than I am. I think it looks excellent, and I think the research that's gone into it, it's all about like the roots of hip hop starting in the 70s in New York. I think it's just, it's only because the era of hip hop that he's talking about doesn't interest me as much as later eras, and I just wish he would get there. But he's, you know, being very, very definitive and taking his sweet time with putting out issues and really, really making sure everything of that early era is documented really well.
But isn't that why it's not that appealing? Because it's so, like, nerdishly accurate in its documenting?
If it was nerdishly accurate about an era of hip-hop that I love, I'd be so fine with it. Like, if it was about, like, New Orleans in the mid-90s,
right.
I'd be, like, that would be, like, my favorite book of all time. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think I'm more, like, as much as I love what he's doing with X-Men Grand Design now, I'm kind of bummed that he's stopped doing Hip Hop Family Tree to focus on that. And also, he was doing that autobiographical comic, Mudfish, which got delayed because he got the X-Men job.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. It's just on the cusp of, like, my favorite period of, well, not favorite, but, like, that period of where, like, hip hop really got good, of, like, the Beastie Boys start putting out albums and, like, it's hinted just, like, Public Enemy of, like, Chuck D's putting on that, like, Pittsburgh Pirates hat, and it's just like, yes, he's gonna do it, and then we haven't got that yet. And just the, yeah, we're on the cusp of all of, you know, the definitive, you know, classic rap albums starting to come out.
Yeah,
instead of being stuck on, like, you know, Grandmaster Flash and all of those, which is really, like, old,
really, really
rappers.
Important. But I feel like it has been, like, you know, when I was getting into hip hop, it's very, very well documented already.
Yeah,
and I've read countless, you know, people retelling those early days. I mean, not everybody has, and certainly not in comic book format. So it definitely is a thing that should exist. I just wish it would get to the era that I want documented.
Yeah.
If it ever does.
Yeah, hopefully.
To the West Coast. Tell me about Dr. Dre, please. Yeah.
Well, they've done the hints, but, like, it was, you know, young Dr. Dre at some party at someone's house. And it's like, ooh, it's very like, ooh, look at this young boy, Clark Kent, sitting in class. I wonder what will become of him one day.
Totally.
It's like, yeah, he's going to do things.
Next comic, you got anyone for us, Siobhan?
I mean, the one that always springs to mind for me is Phonogram.
Like Kieran Gillen.
The Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, the early one. I read that when I was like super obsessed with Britpop, because I was just the coolest guy ever and went straight from rockabilly to Britpop.
it's certainly much cooler than rockabilly.
But I definitely, that I really enjoyed Phonogram, and I think that's where the sort of seeds of his, like, music is magic thing started. But I find it much more enjoyable than I found The Wicked and the Divine, which I know loads of people love now, and I should probably go back and reread. But for me, that's one of my favorite music-based comics. I don't really know that many music-based comics.
I own it. I've still never read Phonogram.
That's good.
In spite of being a massive fan of Wicked and the Divine and the two creators in general.
It's like early Jamie McKelvey, so his art isn't quite as good as it is now.
Yeah,
but the second volume is much better than the first.
Yeah. But his art on the first volume is very kind of stiff, and it was black and white originally.
Yeah.
You can tell that they kind of, I don't know if it was cut corners of just, a lot of it is just not very detailed, but you can see the classic Jamie McKelvey shot of mid-shot kind of staring at the camera looking with, like, doing a hand gesture, which he does in everything he does. I really like Singles Club, the second volume. That was one of, in high school, that was one of the first, like, new comics that I got into, and I think that's kind of the reason I read a lot of the comics that I read now and like the things that I like now. Reading Singles Club was just kind of, I don't know, I want to use the word transformative, but I feel like transformative is like, I don't know, $5 word.
This topic doesn't deserve it.
But yeah, like totally.
It did, like, blow my mind at the time, and I was like, oh, wow, I didn't realize comics could really be like this.
Yeah, and just the way that it's done, all the different perspectives and each issue and stuff. Like, the last issue of the series is just a music video for TV on the Radio's Wolf Like Me, and that's just one of the best songs ever. And just reading that and realizing what it was just like, oh wow, holy shit, I didn't know you could do that with comics.
The reason I've avoided it is it because it is just, it does just sound like him describing music he likes. But is there a narrative to cling on to throughout it, or is it just okay, all right, sweet. All right,
I mean, the Rue Britannia one's cool in that the narrative is Britpop kind of coming back in the mid-2000s with the kind of like Arctic Monkeys and their kind of ilk of, like, you know, here are the new, like, indie rock British superstar bands, and, like, it's Britpop's second coming, and McKelvey is very, very, like, one-for-one self-insert character. David Cole being like, oh, you can't bring that back. Like, you know, you're resurrecting a dead corpse. Like, you shouldn't, like, live in the past. You should make something new and stuff. And it's kind of, yeah, it's just the idea of reconciling the reemergence of fads and like nostalgia of, was everything during that Britpop period the best because you remember it being the best, or was it just good in places but not great overall? Like, you had your Oasis's and Blur's, but there are also, you know, the same thing with like what happened with the grunge movement of just, there are some really good standout bands that who still hold up really, really great, and then there are some bands there who 100% got swept up in the hype of, this grunge stuff really, really sells to the kids these days.
Sure, yeah.
Sign on Bush. Let's get this Glycerine going. But yeah, like...
We actually have a lot of Bush fans listening.
So oh, really?
You've just lost 50% of our core audience.
Well, I like Glycerine. Glycerine goes all right. some Creed.
Does Scott Pilgrim count?
Oh, yeah. I guess that does. Yeah,
of course
yeah.
it does. He's in a band.
Does. Yeah, yeah. It's and all music about played such a bands. Huge part in the movie.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that's probably the music-based comic that most people have read.
But I never think of it as a music-based comic. I think of it as a video game-based comic.
I think of it as a comic about love.
I think of it as a comic book about a man who wants to date a teenager.
Yeah.
Love.
That hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
That's specifically.
Brian Lee O'Malley.
No, the comic as a whole has aged well. Like, I reread all of it last year, and like that was also a very end of high school, one of those comics of like, oh, it's still coming out, and it's kind of like, it's my comics, not, you know, like a lot of the comics I read in high school were, you know, the older Vertigo stuff because that's what people were like, you should read Watchmen and like read Sandman, which is a bad comic, and you should read Why the Last Man. And those were great of just, oh, these are the classics, but none of these are the kind of, you know, the new ones.
Sure.
And yeah, and like Scott Pilgrim holds up really, really well. And
except for the bit where he's waiting outside the high school to pick up knives.
Yeah.
Right.
That bit's not good.
Yeah. And yeah, it's
how old
cool.
is he at that point?
Like 20. He's like 23.
Okay. 23. Yeah.
Too old to be dating a high schooler.
Yeah.
23 is too still disgustingly young in my eyes. So
old man Levin's over here.
Coming out this summer at Marvel. The dystopian future that no one deserves. Old man Levin's.
Just you rocking up to the young kids like, do you like this rap song? Grandpa.
Have a hot dog.
I have a couple that I own that I've never read. The Fifth Beetle.
Yeah, I own that too and I've also never
I bought it from my dad.
It.
He liked it. Dark Horse put it out a few years ago and I gave it to him for Christmas by Andrew Robinson, Vivek Tiwari, and Kyle Baker. It's all about Brian Epstein, who was their producer and often referred to as the Fifth Beetle. And then Jim Henson's Tale of Sand by Ramon K. Perez.
That's a gorgeous
I own
book.
It. I've never fucking
it's
read
beautiful.
It.
It's beautiful. Is that music-based? How's it music-based?
Yeah, isn't it? Like, it's about a dude who plays, like, trumpet.
Oh, yeah. You make a good point.
Yeah.
I think of it as Jim Henson-based, not music-based.
But hey, if you got some cool music-based comics, like maybe that... What's that really sweet comic that's about Henry Rollins and Glenn Danzig?
Oh, Henry and Glenn Forever.
That's a good one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read a few issues of that. That's a few, like, pages of that.
I mean, it's pretty much the exact same joke of just, like, what if Henry and Glenn were in a gay relationship and also Glenn Danzig is the kind of, like, moody one of just always, you know, stirring up trouble.
Yeah.
And just Henry Rollins is just still Henry Rollins of this, like, stern brick wall of a man.
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's actually really... But The writer clearly loves both of them and also the version that he's created of both of these characters. So it doesn't ever appear... It doesn't really come across as crass or kind of exploitative at all.
Yeah.
It's just really sweet.
Yeah. Hasn't the RZA written a bunch of comics? Didn't he write some samurai comics?
Lots of musicians have written comics. If you're in that route, you can talk about the Moon Knight run recently. That was by a bit from Say Anything.
I did that on CBL. Like, one of the last things I wrote for them was this big article about all the celebrities, all the musicians who have written comics.
Gerard
Way is the most obvious one. Courtney Love did
what?
Get ready. Courtney Love, this is a Tokyo Pop thing in like the early 2000s.
Oh,
she did a manga series. Called Princess I, spelled A-I, and I, for all the people who don't speak Japanese out there, is Japanese for the word love. So it's Princess Love.
Right.
And in it, the character Princess I is like an angel person, and there's a war in heaven, and the angels fight demons or something, and she gets sent to Earth. And then while on Earth, she meets this boy. I forget his name, but he wears like a... stripy and dirty, like brown cardigan. He has shoulder length, like shaggy, dirty blonde hair.
So who could it be?
Dave Grohl carries
around this thing that's like a heart-shaped box.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Cool.
I wonder.
Which, of course, is a reference to the Foo Fighters song Monkey Wrench.
Yeah, totally.
Also, should shout out a comic that I know both of you and I love. However, you've only read the half that I'm about to talk about, and that is Love and Rockets, by Jamie and Gilbert Fernandez. Hernandez.
Yeah.
Always forget. That's a tough one to remember. I think that's the seventh variation of their last name I've given on the podcast. But in Jamie's Love and Rockets issues, the bulk of it is about Maggie and Hopi and the like California punk scene in the late 80s. But of course, because it ages in real time, so do the young punk musicians that we meet in the first issues, who are now like going through like midlife crises. And it's, God, that's the best comic in the universe. New issue out this week. Very excited.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Funny thing, you bring up Love and Rockets, the cover for issue one of Meet Me in the Pit.
Which is amazing.
One of the designs I originally, it was done by Rebecca Lowry. One of the designs that I gave to her was the Love and Rockets cover. I think it's issue 24. I could be wrong, but where it's red and black, and it's like a perspective from the stage, and it's Hopi's band playing on stage. And that is like my all-time favorite comic book cover. Like, I love it so much. I gave her that as reference material. Originally, the cover was going to be all black and the character on it was going to be all red, but it just didn't look very nice. So we changed it to being like the black bar at the top, red background, and the figure and the girl dancing in the center is painted with like a really faded yellow. The color design from that is also the color design for Jamie Hernandez's art book, which if you bring it up is the red cover, white lettering, and like, I think it's got Hopi or Maggie on the front, and she's colored that same kind of faded yellow.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, there you go. Good way to end on. If you have some music-based comics that you'd love to talk about, the best place to do that is over in the Serious Issues Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. And while you're there, why not at Chris Neal, because he's in the group as well.
It's true.
You can tell him how much you love Meet Me in the Pits, issues 1 and 2.
Yeah. Both of which are restocked at King's Comics right now. In store and online.
I dropped them off this morning.
And again, you can find them online by the PDFs if you don't want to get the physical, at gumroad.com/blueprint.
Blueprint Comics.
Blueprint Comics. That was so close.
You're almost there.
Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to issues 3 and above.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, man.
3 and above.
See you later.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.